Welcome to episode 21 of the Genius of Thomas Sowell podcast. I'm your host, Alan Woolen. The song you are hearing is called Papa Don't Preach, and it was released by Madonna in 1986, about a decade after Roe v. Wade was passed by the Supreme Court. I remember it well, and I'm sure many of you do too. Papa Don't Preach packed so many powerful subjects into so few lyrics. It's one of those songs, though, which is much better when you watch the video. If you can, pause this podcast right now and watch Papa Don't Preach on YouTube, then come back. It will deepen your appreciation for this episode, I promise. To make it easier for you, I'll put a link to the official video in the show notes. Madonna plays a teenager who lives alone with her father in a row house in a middle-class neighborhood of Queens, New York, where I grew up. She meets a handsome car mechanic, falls in young love, and quickly gets pregnant. But how to tell Daddy? Papa, I know you're going to be upset, because I was always your little girl. But you should know by now, I'm not a baby. The video shows flashbacks of Madonna as a little girl playing with her dad in the front yard, and it captures the adoring and playful connection that is unique and special between fathers and their daughters. This flashback scene really tugs at my heartstrings, because I have four young daughters, and I'm literally living that grainy film flashback scene every single day, times four. You always taught me right from wrong. I need your help, Daddy, please be strong. I may be young at heart, but I know what I'm saying. You always taught me right from wrong. I need your help, Daddy, please be strong. I may be young at heart, but I know what I'm saying. The song takes us into the domain of morality, of choosing between right and wrong, and how that choice takes strength and wisdom. The one you warned me all about. The one you said I could do without. We're in an awful mess, and I don't mean maybe. She finally spills the beans and tells her dad she's pregnant. He's upset. He withdraws into his shell and goes quiet, the way many men do who don't quite know how to process difficult feelings. Madonna tells her dad that she has made a decision. Papa don't preach, I'm in trouble deep. Papa don't preach, I've been losing sleep. But I've made up my mind, I'm keeping my baby. I'm gonna keep my baby. What's interesting to me about this part of the song is how Madonna announces her decision as, I'm going to keep my baby. To me, using the word keep frames the story in a way that suggests that aborting the pregnancy would usually be the norm, but that she's decided to do something different. She's going to keep the baby instead. Madonna then attempts to convince her dad that her decision is right. He says that he's going to marry me. We can raise a little family. Maybe we'll be all right. It's a sacrifice. He says that he's going to marry me. We can raise a little family. Maybe we'll be all right. It's a sacrifice. Madonna sounds not so sure, though. It's only a maybe that will be all right. She says it's a sacrifice, but it's not clear what exactly she would be sacrificing by marrying her sweetheart and raising a little family. Madonna tells us how her friends are advising her to get an abortion instead. But my friends keep telling me to give it up, saying I'm too young, I ought to live it up. What I need right now is some good advice, please. Give it up so you can live it up. That pretty much sums up the abortion issue right there. I hope I don't sound harsh or judgmental when I point to that. I really don't mean to. Heck, I didn't even come up with this language. Madonna did. Daddy, Daddy, if you could only see just how good he's been treating me, you'd give us your blessing right now, because we are in love. We are in love. There's a great scene in this part of the video where Madonna and her mechanic boyfriend are riding the Staten Island ferry at night, and they see an old couple looking at them and probably reminiscing about how they too once enjoyed the throes of young love. What I like about this scene is that it reminds us how interconnected the generations really are, and how one can only understand that from old age looking backwards. I'm telling you, this short, kitschy song from the 80s had so many great themes in it, wrapped up into such a tight, catchy little package. That's it. That's the whole story. Madonna is keeping her baby. The song was quite controversial when it came out in the late 80s and had a polarizing effect within the abortion movement. Anti-abortion activists praised Madonna for the song, while pro-abortion groups criticized her for it. But at the very least, it got people talking about all the right issues. Madonna herself said about the song that, quote, "it has a message that everyone is going to take the wrong way," end quote. But this episode is not about Madonna. It's about the subject of abortion, and specifically about Thomas Sowell's views on abortion and what we can learn about the subject from his various writings on the topic. Abortion has sprung into the news recently in a big way. On May 2nd of this year, Politico leaked a draft opinion by Justice Samuel Alito that would, if it became a ruling, overturn the 1972 Supreme Court decision Roe v. Wade. Justice Alito is a big fan of Thomas Sowell, by the way. Last October, I mailed some Sowell post-it notepads to Justice Alito in Washington. He wrote me back, and this is what he said. "Dear Mr. Wolin, many thanks for sending me the Thomas Sowell post-it notes. I have long been impressed by Professor Sowell's writings, and I am happy that you have started a show dedicated to the discussion of his work. I appreciate the invitation to appear on your show, but I am afraid my work obligations during the very demanding October term 2021 does not permit me to do so. Sincerely yours, Samuel Alito." I'll put a link to the photo of the original letter in the show notes in case you'd like to see it. So the leaking of Justice Alito's draft opinion inspired me to dig up some old Sowell writings on the subject of abortion. Surprisingly, Sowell wrote very little about abortion, and it's not so easy to pin him down to a clear and definite opinion on the subject. His main articles about abortion can be found in his 2011 book, The Thomas Sowell Reader, in two chapters. One is titled Cruel Compassion, and the other he called Aborted Knowledge. He starts the Cruel Compassion chapter with a very common Sowell theme about words and language and how they are used to obfuscate what's really going on. He points to two phrases in particular. Number one, compassion. He says this:
"Compassion has become one of a growing number of politicized words, like access or diversity, whose meaning has been corrupted beyond redemption. Nowhere is there more cruel indifference to the fate of flesh and blood human beings than among the hawkers of compassion when they talk about babies, born and unborn.
Number two. Unborn babies. Sowell says this.
The very phrase unborn babies has been driven from the language by the intelligentsia of the media and academia, who have replaced it with the bloodless and detached word fetus. The success of this desensitization campaign may be judged by how many of us were shocked to learn from the medical movie The Silent Scream that what happens in an abortion is not the surgical removal of some little blob of cells, but the painful dismemberment of a struggling human being attempting in vain to flee from the fatal instruments.
Sowell mentions the film The Silent Scream here, and I had never heard of that movie before. And when Sowell mentions something like this, I often stop what I'm doing and look it up. I figure if he took the trouble to point to it, it must have been important to him in some way, so I should see what it's about. I have discovered many gems that way. For example, you may remember that I discovered the McGuffey's Reader series of books from Sowell pointing to them in his 1993 book, Inside American Education. Anyway, so I found the film The Silent Scream on YouTube, and I watched it. The film is a documentary featuring a former abortion doctor named Dr. Bernard Nathanson and was released in 1984, just 2 years before Madonna sang Papa Don't Preach. In this 29-minute film, Dr. Nathanson shows the viewer exactly how an abortion is performed on the mother of a 12-week-old fetus. He shows the exact instruments used by the doctor and describes the procedure step by step. What made this film so special and unique was that it showed an ultrasound video of the fetus reacting in real time to the abortion that was being performed on it. As Time magazine said of the film at the time, quote, "The film helped to shift the public focus from the horror stories of women who had suffered back alley abortion to the horror movie of a fetus undergoing one," end quote. I will put a link in the show notes to the original full-length documentary so you can watch it yourself. But here's a clip from the movie which will give you a good idea of the tone and impact it must have had on the public consciousness back in the mid-80s.
This suction tip, which you can see moving violently back and forth on the bottom of the screen, is the lethal instrument which will ultimately tear apart and destroy the child. It is only after the fluid has been broken, the sac has been disrupted, that the tip will actually come against the child. But we can see the tip moving back and forth as the abortionist seeks the child's body. Once again, we see the child's mouth wide open in a silent scream in this particular freeze frame. This is the silent scream of a child threatened imminently with extinction. Now, the heart rate has speeded up dramatically, and the child's movements are violent at this point. It does sense aggression in its sanctuary. It is moving away. One can see it moving to the left side of the uterus in an attempt, a pathetic attempt, to escape the inexorable instruments which the abortionist is using to extinguish its life.
At this point in the podcast, I'd like to share a story I've never shared publicly before. My father was an obstetrician and gynecologist. All through my childhood, my father would tell me, "Alan, when you're 18, I'm going to take you along to the hospital so you can watch me deliver a baby." I patiently waited for my 18th birthday to come. Well, the day finally came, and I'll never forget it. It was 1980, and it was literally on my 18th birthday, that exact day, and my dad's pager went off. This was in the day before cell phones. I reminded him that today was my 18th birthday, and true to his word, he said, "Come with me." We hopped in his car, but instead of taking me to the hospital to watch him deliver a baby, on this day, he took me to the clinic to watch him perform an abortion. The sights, sounds, and smells of that clinic are still fresh in my memory today. I watched carefully as he performed the procedure, all the while explaining to me each step of the process and why he was doing what he was doing. My father wanted for me to become a doctor as well, and this was the informal beginning of my training. I can say from personal experience that the abortion procedure which I observed looked exactly like the one described by Dr. Nathanson in his documentary. On a later day, my father kept his original promise to take me to the hospital to watch him deliver a baby. It happened to be a cesarean section that day, but still, that counted. So I got to witness both procedures, the bringing of life into the world, as well as the taking of life out of the world. Both are truly humbling experiences. Back to Sowell. After discussing the Silent Scream film, Sowell then puts his discussion of abortion on hold for a bit and segues into a discussion of adoption, which I found both interesting and confusing at the same time. I don't usually think about abortion and adoption in the same sitting. I usually think of them as very separate and distinct topics. But I understand now that Sowell is trying to get us to see that they are profoundly interconnected. Sowell says this.
It is not just that the reality of abortion is a little too strong for some stomachs. Even less emotionally taxing issues like adoption reflect a very similar vision of the world in which babies are to be dealt with according to ideology and expediency.
Sowell talks about the undercurrents in our society which oppose adoption. He points to two forms this opposition takes. One form is the opposition to transracial adoptions, claiming that such adoptions prevent the child from maintaining their so-called cultural identity. The other form is an opposition to adoption in general, claiming that it is not a good solution because it brings with it many potential problems of its own. So we'll name some of the problems pointed out by opponents of adoption, such as abuse by adoptive parents, adopted children feeling second class compared with their siblings, the desire in later life to track down their biological parents, etc. Sowell then delivers the knockout punch to these and other related arguments with his classic paradigm-shifting reminder, which reverberates through all his books. He says this,
"Of course adoption is not a solution. Neither is anything else in life. In the real world, there are only trade-offs."
Let me play that clip again for emphasis.
"Of course adoption is not a solution. Neither is anything else in life. In the real world, there are only trade-offs."
I don't know about you, but I get goosebumps when I hear these words. Sowell is reminding us that we live in the real world, which is inherently flawed and imperfect. Sure, it would probably be better if every child were raised in a happy household by both of his biological parents. But that's not the world we live in. And adoption, with all its potential downsides and risk factors, while not a total solution to the, quote, problem of unwanted babies, is a viable alternative solution to abortion. Sowell says this.
"Adoption has worked out fine for all sorts of people, from President Gerald Ford to black scientist George Washington Carver, who was raised by a white couple. But of course, adoptions do not always work out fine, just as things do not always turn out fine when people are raised by their biological parents."
At this point in his essay, Sowell then directly connects abortion and adoption. He broaches the subject in a very direct and hard-hitting way, which some people may not like to hear. He says this.
"At the heart of the opposition to adoptions, or to anything that would tend to discourage abortions, is the notion that children are expendable when they inconvenience adults. Anyone who has ever raised children knows that inconvenience is their middle name, and anyone who can look back on his own childhood honestly knows that he was at least an inconvenience, if not a real pain, to his parents on many occasions."
Let me stop right here to fact check what Sowell just said. It's all 1,000% true. I, for one, was a major pain in the you-know-what to my parents. I was cruel to my little sister. I played with fire in the house. I threw heavy objects off the balcony, which was, by the way, on the 27th floor of an apartment building in New York. I really don't know how my mother put up with me. To say I was an inconvenience to her is the understatement of the year. And now, my wife and I are raising 4 young children of our own. Karma is real. That's all I want to say on this subject. And if you didn't get enough goosebumps from that last clip, Sowell then says this.
All that goes with the territory. That is, with a universe we did not make, having constraints we cannot escape, and offering only trade-offs, however much the intelligentsia and the politicians proclaim solutions.
Sowell gets much more specific to the intricacies of abortion in another chapter of the Thomas Sowell Reader called Aborted Knowledge. He talks disparagingly about the term pro-choice. He says this.
Many vocal advocates who declare themselves pro-choice do not want women to have the choice of knowing just what they are choosing before having an abortion. Ferocious opposition has stopped the showing of pictures of an abortion in process, even in schools or colleges that show movies of naked adults performing various sex acts. Still photographs of aborted fetuses have been banned as well.
He talks about the subject of partial birth abortion, also called late-term abortion. To be honest, I didn't even know such a thing existed before I read this discussion by Sowell. And I suspect the vast majority of people do not know that such a procedure is being performed. Here's what Sowell says about this.
The particularly grisly procedure known as partial birth abortion cannot even be referred to in much of the media, where it is called a late-term abortion, another bloodless term, and one that shifts the focus from what happens to when it happens. What happens in a partial birth abortion is that a baby who is developed too far to die naturally when removed from his mother's body is deliberately killed by having his brains sucked out. When this is done, the baby is not completely out of his mother's body, because if he were, the doctor would be charged with murder. There is no medical reason for this procedure, which has been condemned by the American Medical Association. There is only a legal reason: to keep the doctor and the mother out of jail. All this is smoothly covered over in the media by calling such actions a late-term abortion and refusing to specify what happens. Such patterns of determined evasions and obfuscations show that pro-choice in practice often really means pro-abortion. Knowledge is the first thing being aborted.
The thing that I don't understand about these very late-term abortions is why they are being performed in the first place. Is it because of the late discovery of fetal abnormalities? Is it because of some physical danger to the mother? Is it because of turmoil in the life of the expectant mother? I really don't know. A Google search of the subject only left me with more questions than answers, so I'll leave this topic for another day. Sowell admits that abortion is a complex subject, which has no easy resolution. He's not a fan of the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision by the Supreme Court. He says this.
Politically and legally, the abortion issue is too complex for any easy resolution. We have gone through a quarter of a century of bitter controversy precisely because the Supreme Court went for an easy resolution back in 1973 with the Roe v. Wade decision. Before then, various states had made differing efforts to wrestle with and balance the weighty concerns on both sides of the abortion issue. But Supreme Court Justice Harry Blackmun rushed in where angels fear to tread, with a one-size-fits-all decision washed down with the blatant lie that this was based on the Constitution.
I think by now it's clear to almost everyone that Roe v. Wade never really settled the issue in our society. It was never like a coin toss where everyone just accepts that tails came up and we move on from there. Sowell says this.
Far from settling things, Roe v. Wade has led to polarization and escalating strife all across the country, including bombings and assassinations. It has corrupted the media, academia, and other sources that are supposed to inform us, but which have instead become partisan organs of political correctness.
One of the things that always puzzled me about the abortion debate was the framing of the two sides as either pro-life or pro-choice. And I was puzzled by this dichotomy long before I discovered Sowell's writings about how names are used to manipulate us politically. Why not just pro-abortion or anti-abortion? That seems to me to be a more honest framing of the two positions. There are many important and controversial issues in modern life which could also be framed using these terms. The Second Amendment could also be framed this way if we wanted to. You're either pro-life, which means you want guns banned, or you're pro-choice, which means you want the individual to decide whether or not to own a gun. Vaccine requirements could also be framed this way. You're either pro-life, which means you want vaccine mandates in order to save lives, or you're pro-choice, which means you think the individual should get to decide what to put in his or her body. I can easily see many other issues framed in the same way. The legality of suicide, the right for a person to sell his organs, the legality of drugs, and many more. And I question whether or not this pro-life, pro-choice dichotomy clarifies more than it obfuscates. Another crucial and almost completely ignored issue in the abortion debate is this. Sowell famously said,
"The most basic question is not what is best, but who shall decide what is best."
I feel that our society still hasn't decided on the best process for making the final decision about abortion. How should we, as a society, go about making this important decision? Should the Supreme Court decide? Should elected representatives make this decision? If yes, should it be made at the state or federal level? Or should the decision be made only by the pregnant woman, with no interference from the government? Before Roe v. Wade was decided in 1973, abortion rules were established by each state through its elected representatives. So the people of each state got to decide as a collective what the rules should be. Roe v. Wade took this decision away from the people and their representatives and vested 9 unelected judges in black robes with the final decision. Now that the Supreme Court may overturn Roe v. Wade, it looks like the decision will be placed back in the hands of individual state legislatures. It seems like the decision was never really in the hands of the individual woman, with no interference from the collective. But the possibility of getting a so-called back-alley abortion was one way women always grabbed the decision for themselves. And now that there are abortion pills which enable a woman to terminate an early pregnancy at home, with no third-party involvement, it becomes even easier for women to pull this decision into their own hands. Some people even say that men should have no say on this issue, and that only women should be able to weigh in on it. I think that the main reason abortion has long been so controversial in America is that we as a society have never really made the fundamental decision about who gets to decide. To repeat Sowell,
"The most basic question is not what is best, but who shall decide what is best."
When it comes to abortion, there are as many opinions as there are people. It's not easy. Sowell ends his chapter on abortion in a somewhat surprising way. He suggests that feelings might be needed to solve this issue, not just reason and logic. He concludes with this.
"One of the few signs of hope for some ultimate resolution is that most people on both sides of this controversy are not happy about abortions. The women who shed tears at the very sight of an unborn baby may not be politically committed to either side of this issue, but their feelings may be part of what is needed to bring opposing sides together."
I came across a quote the other day which really resonated with me. It was from a man named Raval Navakant, and he said this, quote, "Right to learn, not to teach," unquote. This resonated with me because it reminded me of why I am doing this podcast, not to teach, but to learn. If that sounds like a paradox, that's because it is. While thinking about the subject of abortion, and while reading Sowell's writings about it, more events from my past came to mind. One of them happened many years ago, when I was still in college. In the summer between my sophomore and junior years, I worked at the ophthalmology lab at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City. The doctor I worked under was doing research on glaucoma medications, and the lab tested these medications on rabbits to see whether or not they lowered the pressure in the rabbit's eyes. As a lab assistant, one of my jobs was to take care of the rabbits and prepare them for the tests. I've never shared this publicly before, but maybe now it's time. After the rabbits had been tested and they were no longer needed for the experiments, it was my job to kill them and prepare them for safe disposal. I won't describe here how I killed those poor, innocent rabbits, but I will say that I still experience deep regret and sadness over having been a part of that grisly process. Another event happened just a few years ago. Our dog, a French bulldog named Fidel, was old and sick. He was about 14 years old, which is quite old for a French bulldog, and he was having trouble walking and breathing. Our vet offered little hope of any recovery, and she suggested that we consider putting him to sleep, which we ultimately did. Fidel sat on my lap while the vet administered the drugs which were going to end his life. Fidel fell asleep that day and never woke up. It was painless and calm, but to this day, the whole thing doesn't sit well with me. I am sure I would never do that again. I never expected these events from my past to come to mind while researching the subject of abortion, but they did. How are they related? Sowell once said this.
Some of the biggest cases of mistaken identity are among intellectuals who have trouble remembering that they are not God.
I think what these events from my past have in common with abortion is that they are both instances where I was in some way playing God. When we use animals for experiments, then put them to death when they are no longer needed. When we put an old and sick dog to sleep. When we abort an unwanted baby, these are all instances of us playing God. And whether or not, dear listener, you believe in God or don't believe in God, let me say this. You don't have to believe in God to believe in God. You don't have to believe in God to have a deep appreciation for the profound mystery that is our universe and our place within it. When we tamper with life, we are tampering with something we don't fully understand, and we may want to tread lightly with humility. You don't have to believe in God to believe in God. It seems to me mankind has a playing God problem. Adolf Hitler played God, so did Joseph Stalin and Mao Zedong. When we create deadly coronaviruses in the laboratory, are we playing God? When we clone sheep and someday humans, are we playing God? When we change girls to boys and boys to girls through irreversible surgeries and hormone therapies, are we playing God? When we abort the unborn, are we also playing God? I'll leave you to answer these questions for yourself. I was thinking about Madonna when I started this episode. I don't know a lot about her, so I looked her up online. To my surprise, I learned that she has 6 children, 2 biological and 4 adopted. And the 4 adopted children are black, just as Sowell discussed in his essay about interracial adoption. Madonna's maternal instincts are apparent, both in her song, Papa Don't Preach, where she proudly sings, I'm gonna keep my baby, and in real life, where she took on the expense, stress, and the worry of adopting 4 children who desperately needed a stable home. Here's to you, Madonna. I'm Alan Wolin, and this has been episode 21 of the Genius of Thomas Sowell podcast. Thanks for listening. Before I end this episode, I'd like to remind you that we have 2 big dates coming up. The first is our sweepstakes with basic books to give away 12 Sowell books to 3 lucky winners. The deadline to enter is July 6th, and it's totally free. Just go to sowellbooks.com, give us your info, then cross your fingers and wait. The winners will be notified by email on July 15th, and I'll be announcing the winners here on the podcast. The second date is our Thomas Sowell in-person book club meeting here in Los Angeles. It's going to be on Saturday, July 9th at 3 p.m. The topic of this book club meeting is Thomas Sowell's 2020 book, Charter Schools and Their Enemies. This is a free event. There is no fee to attend. And it's in person, in real life, as they say. If you'd like to come, email me at wolinallen@gmail.com, letting me know you plan to attend. I'll let you know the details and location of the meeting. At the book club event, I will present my summary of Sowell's book, then we'll open it up to everyone for an informal group discussion. Before you go, please check out the show notes to this episode. There's lots of useful information there, including links to the things I reference in the podcast.